Constant Wonder Kids is a Constant Wonder podcast.
Hi, Wonder Kids. It's Paige. What do you think of reptiles? Some people are kind of freaked out by snakes, lizards, and crocodiles. And if you're one of those people, that's okay. I, on the other hand, love reptiles. From the time I was a little girl, I've thought that snakes, geckos, iguanas, and crocodiles were the absolute coolest. There was a small reptile zoo near my house that had a two-headed turtle, creepy crawly tarantulas, and tons of snakes. I always looked forward to visiting because we actually got to hold the snakes. Today's guest knows all about the joys of reptiles and sharing that joy with his community.
I've always been a reptile lover, and my friends and family might call me a geek, but I've always just been enamored with reptiles. That's how my brother and I would spend our Saturday mornings, is running around the neighborhood looking for geckos and lizards and snakes. And so when I went on to college, I was studying biology, and I found myself interning at the Phoenix Herpetological Sanctuary, originally just taking care of medical animals on site. And one thing led to another, and now I take care of the cobras.
This is Joe Himes, and when he talked to the Constant Wonder team, he was taking care of cobras and other reptiles at the Phoenix Herpetological Sanctuary. Now, herpetological is a big word, but herpetology is just the study of amphibians, like frogs and newts, and then reptiles, like snakes and turtles. The word herpetology is also related to one of Joe's favorite pastimes, herping.
Herping is what they call the hobby of going out and seeing reptiles in various places. I usually find it useful to compare it to birding. Just like there are people who love to go out and photograph birds or just see birds in their natural environment, there are herpers that our goal is to go out and see reptiles in their natural environment.
It turns out there are lots of ways you can try to spot reptiles on these herping adventures.
There are different techniques. Some people will road cruise, which you look from a vehicle, and you usually do it after dark, and you can find reptiles that are coming up onto the roads to kind of soak up that last bit of heat that's stored in the asphalt. So that's one popular way where you might just be a herper who finds a stretch of road in the desert that you know there are a lot of reptile crossings, and you just drive for hours looking for them. But then there's more intensive field herping where you'll actually get off onto trails and start looking more, turning over rocks and branches and logs. And mind you, being careful to put it all back because it is animal habitat at the end of the day. But you just start looking everywhere you can.
You might not know anyone who goes herping, but it turns out that the hobby can be a pretty big deal in places where reptiles are common.
If you're in the real hot spots, there are some places where it can become a problem where you have too many herpers going out and interacting with animals in one given area. I joke that if you are in the right places where herping is very popular, it's not uncommon to drive a quarter mile down the road and see somebody playing with a rattlesnake, and another quarter mile down the road and they found a snake crossing the road, but very popular in some places across the Southwest.
Although he enjoys herping out in the wild, most of Joe's interactions with reptiles were happening when he was working at the Phoenix Herpetological Sanctuary. The mission of the sanctuary is all about helping animals in need.
A big majority of the snakes we have are rescues. A lot of these snakes come to us from people who either don't want them anymore or people who had them illegally. And that's, in the case of the venomous snakes, it's usually people who had them illegally and got caught or injured by the snake. And so rather than law enforcement having to put those animals down when people get caught with illegal animals, they get sent here in the best cases.
The Herpetological Sanctuary is a great place for animals that come from unusual circumstances.
They're either illegal pets, they're coming to us because they're on loan from another zoo, or they were found out in the wild where they shouldn't be. And that's the case with one of our biggest alligators, Clem, that was actually found in a pond in northern Arizona.
What? What was an alligator doing in a pond in Arizona?
The story goes that it was on some old farmland in a cattle pond, and when the farmer retired and sold the land to Bureau of Land Management, he said, "Oh yeah, by the way, my pet Clem lives in one of those ponds." And that's when the sanctuary got called over 10 years ago now to go fish out Clem and bring him back to Phoenix.
Oh boy, I'm sure glad that Clem didn't hurt anybody, and that the Phoenix Herpetological Society was able to help. Once the animals get to the sanctuary, it's Joe's job to take care of them.
And my primary job is taking care of the animals here, the venomous animals. So working with snakes is putting them in their enclosures, taking them out of their enclosures, doing regular cleaning of the tanks, doing feedings, stuff like that, and then just general health checks, monitoring them and making sure that they're adjusting to their new homes here.
While some snakes might stay at the herpetological sanctuary forever, others are eventually released back into their natural habitat. That's called rewilding.
If it's a native animal, and if the injuries are minor enough that we can keep them for less than 30 days, then we can usually re-release it to the wild, provided it's either a general species that's going to do well wherever we release it, or we know exactly where it came from, so we're not dropping it off into what's essentially the middle of nowhere for a reptile that might be lost. But if we know where this animal came from, or we know that it will do well anywhere, and we've had it less than 30 days, we will re-release it. Just a few days ago, I had the pleasure of re-releasing a coach whip that was brought into us, and that's a type of snake that we have here in Arizona. A lot of people also call them red racers. Just a long, slender-bodied, very fast, non-venomous snake. But it was missing an eyeball. It had a big wound on his back. But the wound healed quickly, and the one eye being missing didn't seem to be slowing him down, and so I was able to release that one. But of course, the venomous species and the exotic species, those are usually here with us for the long haul, or we'll coordinate getting them sent out to another zoo.
In order to take care of the snakes who live at the sanctuary full time, Joe has to be very careful and thoughtful about how he handles these creatures. Some snakes are venomous, which means that their bites can put poison into whoever they take a chomp at. One well-known and venomous snake is the black mamba. Even though I like snakes, black mambas are a bit too intense for me, but they are Joe's favorite.
From a handling perspective, I love handling black mambas just because there's an intelligence there in that animal that I don't want to say other snakes aren't intelligent. They surprise me all the time with the things they figure out. But the black mambas especially, it doesn't feel like I'm taking this animal and moving them from enclosure A to enclosure B. It feels much more, I'm approaching this animal. I'm being very patient with this animal. I know it's faster than me any day of the week. It's not the most venomous snake in the world, but its venom is very serious and shuts down the communication between your brain and lungs. So there's a respect that you have to have going into it with black mambas. Where it almost feels like they're, in a way, granting you permission to work with them. And that may sound a little out there. But if you try to use other techniques that work fine on rattlesnakes, we teach people how to remove a rattlesnake with tongs, where you just pinch them, pick them up, put them in a bucket, and it's done and over. If you try doing that with a black mamba, they're going to feel something pinch them. And I always tell people they're not the most aggressive snake in the world, but they are the most defensive. The second they feel offended or pinched or threatened in some way, they are known for striking fast and striking multiple times. And so it's much more of a delicate game when you're moving black mambas, because it really just goes best if you don't scare them and you do the whole thing as slow and steady as possible. And so just for that reason, there's something different about working with black mambas that I really love.
Joe didn't always know how to work carefully with black mambas. He had to learn through some tricky trial and error.
I had some moderate training. Our previous venom keeper did leave in a hurry, though, and so there were some gaps in what I knew. I was still going to school at ASU full-time when I started working with the venomous collection, and I kind of mentioned here how it doesn't work out well to grab a black mamba with tongs. I made the mistake of doing exactly that early on. It was in my first year working here, and the entire time I felt like I was working against this snake. The snake was trying to defend himself, and he was stressed out by the end of it. I was stressed out, and I just realized there had to be a better way. I remember being so relieved that I finally had him back in his enclosure. I wear a panic button in case I ever am bit. I took off my panic button. I set my hook down. I went outside and just looked up at the palm trees and took a couple deep breaths because it was so scary. But that was my clue that I needed to reevaluate how I was working with that animal, pick up some new techniques. And since doing that, since taking a more passive approach to working with black mambas in particular, I've not had a single experience that scary ever since.
Learning to work with black mambas and other venomous snakes is well worth the challenge. Not only are snakes cool creatures to observe and interact with, but the very thing that makes them scary, their venom, can actually be helpful to humans in the right circumstances.
We love talking about the medicinal uses of venom. Venom has been used in medication for a long time, and one of the biggest success stories involves the Gila monster.
A Gila monster is a big, slow-moving lizard that lives in the desert. So, not a snake, but another venomous reptile.
Back in the 90s, Gila monster venom was being studied, and they found this one protein, I believe it was called exenatide, and that protein, when injected into rodents, caused insulin to stay longer. And sure enough, more studies show that it had the same effects in humans. And from that research on Gila monster venom, they were able to engineer this protein in a laboratory, and now it's the main ingredient in Byetta and Bydureon, treating millions of people around the world who have diabetes. And there are all sorts of examples, from rattlesnakes to cobras to black mambas, of how their venom, something that evolved to harm animals and be a defense mechanism, is now being turned into life-saving medications for people.
That is amazing. Not only is their venom surprisingly helpful, but snakes and reptiles also benefit humans by keeping other animal populations in check.
So for us here, pack rats are a huge nuisance animal. They'll tear into the heating and pumps that we have that run all of our crocodile ponds. And so the rattlesnakes are great free organic pest control for dealing with those rodents. And in places of the parts of the country where Lyme disease and ticks are more common, you can actually draw direct correlations between places that kill off a bunch of rattlesnakes. The very next year, they'll have a huge spike in Lyme disease and other illnesses. Snakes aren't eating these small rodents that ticks are living on, and so not having the snakes around causes a rodent boom in population, and that causes a tick boom in population, and then that ends up causing a boom in human Lyme disease and other tick and flea transmitted diseases. So there really is a straight line correlating the health of reptiles and snakes specifically to the health of people.
Joe loves sharing exciting information about snakes with people, especially kids like you.
Whenever I'm talking to kids, I always try to make the first thing be, whenever you encounter a snake, if it's a snake in the wild, don't pick it up, don't approach it. The rule of thumb we tell everybody is, as long as you maintain 3 feet of distance between any snake that's native that you find in the U.S., you're going to be a safe distance away from it. Because there is, of course, that risk that if you pick up a venomous species, you're going to get bit. If you play with fire, you'll get burned, so to speak. But once that risk is kind of been addressed and the kid knows they can't just go picking up any snake willy-nilly, from there we get into talking about all the reasons snakes are good to have around.
Snakes really are incredible. Whether they're helping to control rodent and tick populations, providing venom for new medications, or just looking like the cool reptiles they are. Just like Joe, you can appreciate snakes and reptiles that you see at your local zoos. You can also go out into the wild and give herping a try. But remember, be careful and give the snakes 3 feet of space. Getting to know different animals allows us to feel more and more wonder in the natural world.
A quick word here for you parents. I'm Marcus Smith, host of Constant Wonder, which is the source of material for Constant Wonder Kids. We made this episode because Constant Wonder contains a lot of great stuff that kids will love too, but you may be wanting more. Constant Wonder is on an ongoing quest to find awe and wonder in all nature, human or wild, vast or small. The kinds of encounters that move us beyond words. Remember when you had time for wonder? Well, we think you still do. Subscribe to Constant Wonder on your favorite platform. Constant Wonder Kids was produced by Paige Crumperman-Darrington with sound design by Mitchell Towsley. Tenery Taylor is the executive producer. Constant Wonder Kids is a production of BYU Radio.